And we're recording. Very good. Look, this session, which is going to go for 55 minutes until 12:15, when we'll then have lunch, and we will totally not go over time because that's not polite to our lunch makers, because they've been very good in feeding us, is really going to be talking about this thing called the five M's. Now, what's the five M's and why are we talking about it today? Let me give you a little overview of what's going on there. I think there are some handouts there, which I'm going to hand out in a minute. Basically, some of you may or may not have heard of a thing called team pastoring, purpose-driven pastoring, the five M's. Hands up here who's actually heard of that, just so I get some gauge. Yeah, okay. Basically, what's happened is that a little while ago, as a leadership and staff team, we began thinking through what it might look like for us at Trinity City to move to a 5M's way of doing things. Now, I'm going to explain in the next 55 minutes what exactly that is and have a chance for questions. Then, as a whole network, quite independently of that, as a whole network, which means Paul as our senior network pastor and all of the centre gathering pastors, so the pastors of all the various churches in our network, decided that, yes, indeed, we did want to go to a 5M's way of doing things as a leadership structure and indeed as a ministry philosophy. And so the thing that we were already thinking about doing then became something that we decided that we would do here at Trinity City, but with a huge amount of flexibility about what that will actually look like and the timeframes. Now, because that's been something that's been rolled out across the whole network now, and our network is 9 churches, different churches are at different stages when it comes to what this whole 5Ms thing looks like and how far they are along that track. Some are really just at ground zero, others are at, they're quite well developed. Now, some are quite well developed, and obviously those people are then talking to other people in the network church, and as a result of that, that information is filtered back to us here at Trinity City and members, and people are going, oh, what's 5Ms? What's all of this about? Are we going to completely change? Will the building burn down? Will we have pastors anymore? And, you know, kind of all that kind of stuff. So what we wanted to do is to kind of get ahead of that communication cycle, or to sort of try and get back ahead of the communication cycle, we're going to do today something that we were going to do with you anyway, which is basically let you in on some of our thinking about where we want to head as a church when it comes to the way we structure ourselves and the way we think about our ministry. And so explain this. This is something we were going to do with you as small group leaders anyway. The machine in my pocket is busy recording it for those who couldn't make it here. I trust that that's still happening. Yes, it is. And so they'll be able to listen to it. But that's really the purpose of what we're going to do for the next, well, now 15 minutes. About that. It's just to give you an insight about where we're up to on that. It's not going to be a full explanation of where we're up to. Well, it's going to be a full explanation of where we're up to, but there's still that heap still up in the air for us. So I'm just going to let you know how far we've got, and then that's as far as we've got, and you can ask questions further on. Is that okay? Does that all make sense? Do we all know why we're here, why I'm going to stand up and talk to you for the next 50 minutes, and also have a chance to talk? Right, great. That's good. Now, first things first. So I don't have to spend the whole time thinking, I want us to just sing out, what are the purposes of the Christian life? There you go, you've had your morning tea. What are the purposes of the Christian life? What are we to do? What does our life revolve around? And again, not a trick question and no dumb answers. So I'm keen for people just to sing it out as rapid fire as you like. To praise and honour God. Praise and honour and enjoy God. My handwriting would indicate that I should have been a doctor. My marks at school would not. Can you read it? Very good. It's not bad enough. Franklin's going, you could never have been a doctor. For more than one reason. Okay, to praise, honour and enjoy God. Absolutely. What are the other purposes of the Christian life? What are we to do? Tell others. Yeah, tell others. And I'm going to put in there about Jesus, the gospel, God, etc. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yep, other things. What are the other purposes?
Become like Jesus.
Become like Jesus. Yeah. That's Romans 8, 28 and 29, isn't it? Absolutely. What else?
Grow in holiness.
That's right. And you can actually put become like Jesus, grow in holiness together there, couldn't you? Yep. Yeah, study the word, absolutely. So I'm going to call that study the Bible. Yep. That's a good thing to do, isn't it?
Teach and encourage.
Sorry, to teach and encourage. Yep, absolutely. So some of the things that we do, yep. Yep, other things we ought to do?
Care for others.
Care for others, yeah, okay. And you could probably break that down into... So love would be a good example of that, isn't it? So care for others. And you could break that down both, so Christians and non-Christians. Yep. And love is a pretty good summary of that, isn't it? Yep.
Be good stewards of creation.
Be good stewards of creation, absolutely. Yep, we're to look after the place. Other things we're to do?
Grow in a relationship with God.
Yeah, grow in a relationship with God, absolutely. I might put that up there with study the Bible. Not that studying the Bible is the only way that one does that, but it's part of that family of ideas. Yep. Suffer for the gospel. Yeah. Or if it's... If it's not a purpose, it's certainly a result, isn't it? Yeah, that's right, often. Anything else?
Pray.
Pray, yeah, absolutely. I'm going to pop that up there too. Yep.
Fellowship with other believers.
Yep, that's right. I'm going to put that under care for others, Christians. Fellowship. Yep. Persevere. Yeah, that's right, stick at it. So do all of this until you stop breathing. We're going to be learning about that, but I have already been persevere. I'm not sure if... I never know how many E's are in persevere. It's like trying to spell commitment. How many M's, how many T's? It's a mystery. For me. Any other purposes in particular?
Use our gifts and talents.
Use our gifts and talents. Yeah. And just finally, any others? Just as the gaps between our things increase. Look, it's not a bad summary, is it? And look, I'm sure we could add other things and we could make them more fine-grained. But isn't it interesting that in less than 5 minutes, in a relatively small group, I think we're relatively easily able to summarise what the Christian life is about. Like we'd sing out here, and I don't think any Christian would disagree with any of those things. And even in that short period... Nothing particularly large seems to have been missed out to me. Now, when we talk about the five M's, what the five M's stand for, like the actual, what the M's stand for, is actually really just a summary in one of those helpful, let's all begin everything with the same letter kind of ideas, trying to summarise these purposes. So I'll tell you what the five M's actually are, and you'll kind of laugh because they all start with the same letter. They're clearly produced by a preacher, because preachers have to have all the points starting with the same letter, particularly if they're Presbyterian or ex-Presbyterian. So you've got magnification. I'll explain what that means. You've got mission. You've got membership. You've got maturity, and you've got ministry. In other words, what the five M's simply stand for is this, in a kind of a condensed form, as an attempt to not completely comprehensively, but still accurately summarise what's the point of being a Christian. Like, what's the purpose of the Christian life? So first of all, it is to magnify God in all things. So to praise, honour and enjoy God. It's to grow in your relationship with God. It's to do those kinds of things, to count God as your greatest treasure, to set your affections on him, all that kind of stuff. It's to worship him. That's magnification. And you might think, oh, well, of all the M's, that seems to, they've really had to try and make that one an M. Because magnification, you normally think of like a magnifying glass or something. The phrase itself comes from an old version of, I think it's maybe the King James version of a particular psalm, which talks about, you know, magnify the Lord. In other words, when you think about it, it's actually quite a good expression. Make him look big, because he is big. So that's that. Mission, tell others about Jesus. Pretty straightforward. We want to be people who see other people magnifying God. We want to be people who want to see as many people as possible loving and praising and worshipping God and making him their treasure. Membership, meaning membership of a church. We want to do this and this, not as individuals, but together in a loving community which cares for one another. In other words, if you think of this almost as a process, someone becomes a Christian, they're converted to Christ, they then need to become converted to church. And we all know that sometimes those are two separate conversions, often separated by several years. Membership is being converted to church. It's actually saying, hey, we're on about this all together. And you could see that there. Care for others, in particular, in the kind of the Christian fellowship stuff there as well. We're going to be suffering for the gospel and persevering and being good stewards of our creation together and things like that as well. Maturity, once I've become a Christian and once I've actually realised, oh, we're all on this together, what am I heading towards? Well, I'm heading towards maturity, that is growing up into Christ. So becoming like Jesus and growing in holiness. And how do I get there? Well, I'll be studying the Bible and I'll be teaching and encouraging other people. That's how I become mature, isn't it? That's how I grow up into Christ. And once I've done that, because I set God as my greatest treasure over everyone, because of that I really want to see other people become Christians, because of that I really want to do us all together, because all together I want to become more like Jesus, I'm going to serve. I'm going to be involved in ministry, which is just what the word ministry means, servant. And so I'm going to be using my gifts and talents and persevering as I do that. And so that's what ministry is. And all of these things, to some extent, just about any purpose you can think of could fit under one of these headings, couldn't it? I mean, being a good steward of creation, well, that's something that a mature Christian does, not an immature Christian. The immature Christian just chucks the Maccas out the window. Not the food, the rubbish. So what? When you hear the expression, the five M's, I thought I should start by just explaining what those M's actually stand for. They're just an attempt to be a summary. Gosh, that pen's a bit more persevering than I thought. That's what they stand for. It's not meant to be exhaustive, but it's meant to be an accurate summary of the purposes of the Christian life. Now, any other questions or comments about that before we move on? Bearing in mind, I want to answer your questions from time to time, so that it's not just my voice. Some of your questions might be answered by something I've got to say further on, though. I'm just conscious of time. Does that all make sense? Great. Okay. So, if these are our purposes, if this is the purpose of every single Christian in the world, in fact, if this is actually the purpose of every single person on the planet, regardless of whether they know it yet or not, then by moving to a 5M's philosophy of ministry, we're not actually moving at all, in some sense. Because it's not as if when we say, oh, we're going to move to a 5M's model of ministry, that we're actually doing anything new when it comes to these purposes, is it, in many ways? Because it's not as if we'll suddenly go, like a transition from imperial currency to decimal currency, oh, so that's what my purpose in life was. I had no idea I had to do evangelism. I didn't realise church was important. Of course, these are exactly the things that Christians have always been about already and that we're already about as a church. So what does it actually mean then to move to these things rather than just actually just have a helpful summary of what we're already doing? Well, what it means is that when we talk about moving to a 5 M's model of ministry or ministry philosophy, it doesn't mean changing our focuses. It means clarifying them. But it then means taking the next step of intentionally trying to shape what we do around these purposes. So let me give you an example of how we often don't do that. And I'll use the example of, say, maybe the way that we employ staff. So, for example, churches I've been a part of, not just this one, but previous ones. And by the way, I should say this is no criticism of people who occupy these roles or do this. It's just a way of cutting it. So, for instance, we often staff according to, we might have specialist ministry. So you might have a men's minister, a men's ministry. And you have the men's ministry. You might have a women's ministry or a youth ministry, all those kinds of things. Now, they're not wrong at all. But often, because all you're saying is, what you're saying to that men's minister is, men's minister, I want you to do all of these 5 things yourself. I want you to, in the life of your men, see them magnify God, get them on mission, etc., etc., etc. But you're not staffing according to purpose. You're not actually explicitly staffing according to purpose. You're hoping that the men's minister will get to all of these things and will actually indeed have the gifts to do all of those things. Now, they may do, but they may not. Another way of doing it is that you can actually structure yourself from the way you do staffing all the way down to actually staff according to these things and actually organise yourself. So you actually say, well, this person is going to be the missions pastor. This person is going to be the membership pastor. This person is going to look after maturity, ministry, and magnification. Do you see what it's doing? It's actually just specifically aligning what we do according to these. Now, that's simply at a staffing level, but I've already jumped ahead too far. What I want to do is I want to hand out to you... that is really small, isn't it? That's okay. If you want to, I want you to take some of these and pass them around. If you want a poster... Look at those lovely posters. Aren't they good? Can you take those and start passing them around there? Bernie, can you take those and start passing them around there? What I'm passing around to you is a copy of the ministry model that we're talking about here. And it's got pretty pictures, and that's fine. I'll just wait till everyone's got one. I'll wait till the flapping of paper subsists. Are there not enough to go around? There are smaller versions. So if you... Hands up who doesn't have one yet? Oh, okay. If people... Yeah, that's right. Be kind to the people who don't have great eyesight. If you don't have great eyesight, you know, just pop your hand up if you want a big one. There are smaller ones. There are big poster versions and there are smaller ones. If you have a smaller one... If you have a smaller one, you may indeed need magnification to see it. Boom, boom. Okay, has everyone got a poster? Has everyone got a poster or a piece of paper? Has anyone not? Okay, I'm going to call you back to order. What this does is it simply is a graphical way of representing what it would look like to, we're already about these things, what would it look like to group what we do explicitly around those purposes? And you can see the advantage of arranging what you do explicitly around purposes, because what it does is it then gives you a criteria by which to assess, should I keep doing this or should I not? How many times have you been in a position, either at work or in church, where you actually forget why we're doing what we're doing? Or you think, well, I know I keep doing this, but is it actually achieving the goal I want it to? Now, it may or it may not. Sometimes we do things because we quite explicitly want to achieve a particular purpose. Sometimes we do things in church, as in life, simply because we've just always done them. Well, how would you actually make a decision about that? Well, by specifically focusing on these purposes, this actually helps provide you with a filter. It gives you clarity. The aim here is that as a church, we only want to do things, if these are our five purposes for the Christian life, I only want to be doing things that will directly or indirectly, but fairly closely indirectly, further these purposes. If they don't, then I don't want to do them. And that's actually quite liberating. Is what I'm doing, or is what we're doing as a church actually achieving any of these purposes? No. Great, we don't have to do it. Is it achieving these purposes? Yes. Let's keep doing them and work out how to do them better. And so you can see that example there when you're looking at these purposes here. So, for example, in each page, or on each sixth, you'll see a definition. Let's go to magnification first. So the definition there of what magnification is living for God's glory as the first and most important purpose in the Christian life. We magnify the glory of God, Father, Son, and Spirit as we orient our whole lives around serving and enjoying Him. This impacts our work, family, ambitions, and all that we do. That's what magnification is. Now, what does that look like in the life of every single Christian person? It's to develop what's our purpose for them, and indeed for ourselves. It's to develop passionate adoration, praise, and thanksgiving among God's people as we respond to God's grace to us in Jesus. This is expressed through the godly affections of delight, joy, assurance, thanksgiving, and lament. That's what we want to see in everyone's life, including my own. Then how might we structure what we do to achieve that purpose? Well, you'll see that it's expressed you've got magnification at the center. That's what we want to do. That's the outcome we want to see. And then in the broader but still coloured part of the circle, you've got some of the things we might do to see that happen. And a key part of this is understanding the difference between what we want to see happen, what you might call an output, and what we can do under God to see that happen, an input. That's a really key thing to get when it comes to thinking through this. Magnification amongst all God's people, that's what we want to see happen, that's an output. What can we do to see that happen? Where are the arenas that can happen? Well, that's some of the stuff in those outer things there. So what are some of the things that we can do to help? Well, we could hold weekly gatherings to help praise God. Well, we call them Sunday services, don't we? So that gets a Guernsey there. We could hold special gatherings. Let's say Christmas and Easter and prayer meetings and things like that. We just saw a really good example of that, didn't we? That's an input. That's something we do. We want to make those really good, so we want to train people how to do them. Well, you can see that we want to train that there as well. But also, we also understand that magnifying and loving God isn't just something that happens at events. It's actually something that happens throughout all of life. So how might I help my brothers and sisters increase in their love and affection for God? Well, some of them really love singing in the car. So I'll put together a Spotify playlist of some of the songs that we'll be singing at church, or that'll be really helpful to help us thinking through Philippians. I might put that together. I might put together weekly prayer points to help people in their adoration of God, or devotional notes to help us read through Philippians during the week at a slower pace or something like that. And so you can see that there. And then you go even further out to the words poking out like spokes on a wheel, and you see much more specific things there. So under our church gatherings, you can see lots of things. And one of the things you'll note is that these are things that we already do. Bible reading, congregational prayer, kids talks, etc., etc., etc. All those kinds of things, they're the kinds of things that we do under God to achieve the purpose that's in the middle. Does that make sense? And I won't repeat it for all the other ones. It's just to illustrate the principle of what it looks like for us to arrange what we do around what we want to see achieved. That's really the point of it. That's really the main thing. Now, as you can see, and I'm going to stop in a minute just to answer some questions, many of the things that we already do fit somewhere on one of these wheels. So if you were to actually go through all five of these, and I'd encourage you to do it when you get home, you'll actually see that we haven't actually cut anything, or really very much at all, that we don't already do at Trinity as a church. Like, we've just rearranged them around different wheels. Now you might think, well, how is that actually doing anything? Is it actually just spending an awful lot of work just kind of reshuffling deck chairs? Well, of course, in some sense, yes, it is. But I think this process still does two things. Because it starts with purpose, it starts with output, and only then moves to input, which frankly is not always our way of thinking. It does actually, first of all, provide us with clarity, even if we didn't get rid of anything that we were doing. It does provide us with clarity about why we're doing it. Why am I doing this? Oh, that's right. It's to magnify God. It gives me a focus. And secondly, it does actually still help as a filter. Doing this actually forces us to reassess what we're doing and also gives us a criteria to say yes and no to things. Yes, there's a big gap here. We need to fill it. No, that thing that we've been doing for years doesn't actually, when I think about it, achieve any of these purposes. Let's ditch it. That's part of the thinking there. Now, I've spoken quite enough. That's the main point about this. And to some extent, that's actually the guts of it. It's really just having a mindset of thinking purpose and then designing your inputs, what you do around it, rather than the other way around, rather than kind of going, let's do a bunch of things and hope some of them work. That's actually the main point of why we want to start increasingly thinking this way and organising ourselves accordingly. Are there any questions about that before I go on to how that might look more in the nitty-gritty? Really happy for questions. Yes, Carol.
I have a lot of thoughts going through my head, so
sure.
Yes, I try to condense
things. Yeah, totally.
I'm just looking at the point on membership.
Yes.
I understand with your explanation what we're talking about there.
Yeah.
I guess just the gap I have, and I understand we're trying to, everything has to start with an end, so.
Yeah, sure. Yes. Yeah, sure.
So if that was like a family, I would think, oh yeah, that's togethering. But when I think membership, I think of like an external organisation and I might choose to.
Yeah. What we do. Yeah. So if I've heard you right, I'm just repeating this back to make sure I've heard it, is the concept for you is not the issue. It's actually just the, in your view, possibly unhelpful use of the actual word membership because it has connotations of I'm a member of the coffee club, I'm a member of the RSL, and that kind of has fairly low expectations, whereas other words might, you know, conjure more buy-in. Is that right? Yes. Yeah, that's right. And look, I actually think that's a perfectly good question. And the point is, you could actually ditch that word. That would be fine. As you say, it's clearly it's put into M's, not because this is the list that God has in his sealed envelope in his desk in heaven. It's just a memory tool. And if it's unhelpful, and if it proved to be unhelpful, happily ditch it. Because there are other words for that. I mean, part of the problem is it's hard to actually ever come across one word that will ever sum it up, because even the Bible doesn't try and do that. It uses a whole bunch of words. The church is a temple, a family, all of which come at it from a slightly different angle. And so they've chosen, you know, one word to summarise it. So, that's right. But it's the concept that's the important thing. So if, when you go home, you actually look at the membership definitions there, even that won't sum up everything, but it'll hopefully flesh out a little of what that means. But I do take your point, particularly, you know, it makes us work out, well, how much do we want to talk in terms of 5 M's, or how much do we actually just want to talk about the purposes of church and that actually being converted to church? I think the purpose is the thing to talk about, because it's a good question. Okay, other questions? Yeah.
In the previous list of things that were core to the Christian life,
yes.
You had love and then basically caring for people, both Christians and non-Christians.
Yes.
Under like membership and pastoral care, you know, that the accounting for the Christians is there. How does caring for non-Christians fit into this model? Looking across the things like city life or...
Yeah. I would think they would fit under mission. So mission effectively deals with all of our dealings with the non-Christian world, if you like. So you'll see there, there's obviously things like evangelistic courses. So you'll see events, you'd have evangelistic course. But you could also, and it's not on there, but it easily could be, I would think you would put in something like City Light there. Because it's not evangelistic, because it's not preaching the gospel, but it paves the way for the gospel, and that would absolutely be something that fits in there as part of our witness. And also just because we want to love people and care for people. So the outside list, you know, the spokes, that's not comprehensive. You know, we can add things to that. The key is what it does is it just helps us locate everything that we do around one of five key purposes. And that's actually really helpful in clarifying what we do. Because when a new idea comes up, our first thought as a whole church, not just as leaders, but everyone, is to go, how does it help us do one of these things? If it does, great, find a spot for it. If it doesn't, maybe not do it, because there's only so many hours in the day. Other questions? Yeah, Anna.
I noticed that in the ministry circle, there's a section on resourcing.
Yes.
Oh,
it's not. So resourcing ministry teams. No, it's more to do, well, obviously there'll need to be money at some point to pay for things, but that's more to do things like, so as ministry we're saying, when we ask people to teach the Bible to anyone, be it a youth group or a children's church or whatever, we want to actually give them good resources to help them do that, be that training like this, or a study booklet, or both. You know, in the case of Kids Church, it could be glitter and glue. They're resources that help in that kind of way of doing things. So,
okay, that's helpful. But I was wondering,
where does money fit in?
Yeah, I was thinking perhaps in the membership, so giving.
Yeah, not everything to some extent fits in here. You could say that there's a sixth kind of arm to this, which is what you might call executive support. Sorry, someone made a good joke.
Six things
is miscellaneous. Miscellaneous. Yeah, that's right. And that's the ministry that everyone wants to be involved in. I'm involved in miscellaneous. So that can deal with things like, say, look, if we were thinking through, you know, if we move from purpose for a moment to structure, like structuring ourselves around it, like there are certain things where you need executive support to these kinds of things. So that's where like the office kind of fits into there. And obviously money is one of those things. Like money is not a purpose in itself, but money helps things happen. And so we need that to happen. And so that would be part of where that would fit in. So again, this arranges itself again around purposes. And it's really, the whole point is you close your eyes and you think, what do I want to see for every single member of Trinity City? And in fact, this city, I want to see a person who loves Jesus, who wants to see other people love Jesus, who wants to do it together, who wants to do it together so we can all look more like Jesus, and whose love of Jesus overflows in service. That's what I want to see for everyone. And that's the key thing to keep drumming on about, is the purposes. And then we just simply structure explicitly around that so that we know what we're doing is helping serve one of those purposes, rather than simply hoping what we're doing is serving one of those purposes. Does that make sense? Yeah, Naomi.
You may be going there in your details.
But yes.
We've had fun run international ministry for some time.
Yes.
That's not kind of acknowledged or on here.
Yes. What does that look like?
International, Mandarin.
Yeah.
Things, where does that fit?
How does that fit? So it's a great question. And the reason it's not on here isn't because it's not important, but because that actually raises a really good opportunity to clarify, because international people are not a purpose, just as men are not a purpose and women are not a purpose. That's why here, when it came to staffing, you might not ever have an you might not have an internationals pastor. You could still, and I'll get to that in a minute. But your Bernie's come here. And you may not have a women's pastor. You may not have a men's pastor. You will still simply because men and women aren't purposes. They're people in whom you want purposes lived out. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't minister to internationals or to women or to men, and possibly even quite specifically according to specific needs, but we just do it through another means. And so, for instance, to take the example of international ministry, if we think to ourselves, well, what's actually one of the key differences between, say, international students and the wider church body? You might go, well, one of them is going to be language and culture. What's that going to affect the most? Well, it'll affect a bunch of things, but one of the big things it will affect is Bible teaching. And so when it comes to maturing them, it might make a lot of sense to actually have a separate Bible study stream which helps grow them and mature them in the knowledge of God, which is how God sculpts them into people who look more like Jesus. Why don't we have an internationals Bible study? Oh, that's right, we already do. We've got TIBS. And so that might fit in there. And so you might actually have, under maturity, you probably have all of your small groups under there. And by small groups, that's TIBS, that's the Bible studies you guys lead, or the people who aren't already leading TIBS lead. That's minis for my Sam. That's a Bible study. It's just a Bible study that's age-appropriate. It's got less text and more glitter. But you see that it's still actually the same point. It would still fit under there. But now I'm just explicitly reminding myself of, oh, that's right, that's why I do it. Now, of course, you can already do that without a 5-point summary, but it just helps you do that and it helps as a filter. Now, one last question before we maybe move on, because I have got some other things. Yeah, David.
I like the idea of purposes, of being specific about each one of these. Are there any dangers in terms of focusing only on one thing for a ministry? Because these things often interlink.
Yes, yes. So, yes, there could be. So the danger that you're talking about, David, is the danger of what's called siloing, if you've heard of siloing in organisations. So siloing happens in an organisation where you're given your little patch to look after and you completely lose focus of the bigger picture and you just focus on your patch. So it is absolutely possible that if you were part of a magnification team at church, you just go, well, all I care about is magnification and I couldn't care at all about these other four things. You could do that. The problem is we can still do that now. We just have different silos. The silos just aren't according to purpose. I, at 9 a.m., as the 9 a.m. pastor, could just become completely focused on 9 a.m. and not care about the rest of the church. So there's still that risk. In all of this, it's designed to do two things. On the one hand, let's say, and we'll get to this when it comes to what staffing might look like, and not just staffing because that has flow-on effects. Let's say I'm actually the pastor who's in charge of magnification. I'm a magnification pastor. So it's my job to help lead teams, which will help all of us magnify God as best we can. I could just get focused on that. Now, the advantage of actually putting me in that role is that there is a sense in which, no, I don't have to worry so much about these other things. You know what it's like to have 5 different tabs open on your computer when you're trying to work on something? Certainly as a man, I find that quite tricky. I get distracted. It's nice to be able to go, do you know what, I've just got this job and I don't have to stay awake at night worrying about what's going to happen with mission because I know someone else has got that job and I can hand them over to them. That's actually an advantage of specialising and focusing. At the same time, we don't want to silo, and these do need to all see themselves as part of the same whole, which is why all of our ministry teams are going to need to be thinking through hard how exactly they relate to each other. Does that answer your question? Sort of? No?
It's scary, isn't it? Like, if I think about magnification only, I, as a Christian, would want to think about all these things at all times.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And that's exactly right. So these are, you can't just say I'm a magnification Christian, but I couldn't care about the Bible. And that's not the purpose. So that's actually helpful that you said that. The idea is to see all of these expressed as much as possible in all of us. When it comes to how we structure ourselves as a church, it's actually saying, well, we might devote certain staff members and certain teams to focus on these areas. But remember, every person is actually being served by 5 of these teams in all sorts of areas. So we're getting input from everywhere so that in the life of everyone, that doesn't actually happen. So I've got a magnification pastor who's helping lead me in that. I've got a membership pastor who's really helping me integrate or pastorally care for me when the wheels fall off. A maturity pastor who's helping train the Bible study leaders so that I'm being well taught in my small group. All that kind of stuff. So I think that's how that works. So you're right, you don't want to become the person who goes, well, I'm the evangelist, but, you know, I never come to church. So,
yeah. Is it more all five are important and some lead on some things, where, you know, like some will be leading those areas? But
yes.
It doesn't mean to say that other people don't contribute, other areas they contribute.
No, absolutely
it's
not.
Integrated, like everyone should be about the five, but they lead on parts of
the area. Yeah, that's right. And that's... Look, and we do that already, don't we? I mean, we already integrate things. We divide things up into specialties, but we also integrate. So this is just the same principle, just hopefully doing it in a slightly more logical and slightly more purpose-oriented way, just to make sure, again, that everything we do does serve a purpose rather than just we hope it does. That's kind of the point of it, I think. So let me talk to you briefly about how this might look structurally. So we've got our purposes, and we've said let's structure ourselves around that. So how do we think about that? Well, it might be, I've already alluded to the staffing question, it might be that what we do is we actually say, look, let's not actually staff according to gathering specifically. So at the moment we have a mixture. We have gathering pastors, so I'm the 9am gathering pastor, and then we have specialist pastors, so Bernie's International's pastor or whatever. If we're saying, let's structure around purpose, why don't we staff around purpose as well? So why don't we have a MAG pastor? And why don't we have a mission pastor? And why don't we have a, and you get the picture, membership, and then maturity, and then ministry. And then, so rather than asking me, as 9am pastor, to be trying to see all of these five purposes lived out in the lives of my people at 9, rather than asking me to do that, we're actually asking we're asking five people to have input, or five staff members to take responsibility for that at, say, 9. Now, there are advantages to that, because the fact is, in each individual gathering pastor, there'll be a mixture of gifts. I don't have equal strengths in all of these areas. So I'm not naturally an evangelist. So if you're at 9am, you're going to kind of miss out there. From me, at least, I'm just making the confession here. I'm not a, you know, I teach the Bible and I can do that okay, so you're probably going to do okay there. You know, membership, I might be somewhere in between. Most pastors are good at 2. The weapons, the people who are just brilliant, are good at 3. No one's good at 5. No one can do 5. Like, none of us can. And so what happens is it immediately means that 9am are missing out in some pretty key areas if they're just all focusing on me to do it. Why not actually say, look, let's actually staff according, let's get someone who's brilliant at magnification and thinking through that and get them to be responsible for that across all of our gatherings. And mission, well, we've already got that, haven't we, in Arthur. Or membership, or maturity, or ministry, we get people who have specific gifts in that and get them to look after that, not just across a particular gathering, so organising ourselves that way, but organising ourselves that way. Now, of course, the next question will be, well, hang on, that's all very well, but if you do it that way, one of the advantages of gathering pastors is you're looking after a relatively small number of people. So at 9am, that's 200 people, that's not 850. That's how many people we've got coming through the doors on a Sunday. How on earth are you going to do that? Well, here is where I think in many ways the real strength of this comes. What it does is it says that because, say, the MAG pastor can't possibly do it across all of our gatherings or across all of our focuses, what we do is you do divide the church up into different gatherings or focuses, you might call them, particular groups of people you want to focus on. Let's say this is 9am. Let's say this is 10:30, let's say this is 5 and 7, let's say this is the Mandarin gathering. Mandarin simply because of the barriers of language. And I'll go, well, I'm now going to have a MAG rep at 9. And I'm going to have a MAG rep at 10:30. And so the MAG pastor, who can't possibly be responsible for 850 people all at once, actually goes, well, how I will actually see this work is I'll actually work with representatives at each of our focuses who are actually working on the ground to see this happen in their particular gatherings. And one of the joys of this is that this could be a staff member, but it need not be. It could be a really involved layperson. And I think once you actually see that happen, if you can actually fill in what you might call a matrix here, you've actually got a massively increased opportunity for lay leadership and ownership in our church, where it actually, the structure forces you to really train up and equip. Well, we're all training and equipping each other. Now, again, of course, this is already happening. It's not as if we don't have lay leaders. If we didn't, I'd be talking to chairs right now, largely. But again, this is a way of doing it in a purpose-driven way, which helps in that. Again, this is just a structure designed to help achieve a purpose. Our natural presumption will be to jump to structure and what will this look like and who'll be, the idea is purpose, but this is what it might look like structurally. Now, questions on that, because we've got 10 minutes left. Yeah, Joe. Oh, okay.
Because in the sense that it looks, the potential is that you actually need a lot more heavily involved lay people, which has great advantages, but it could also look like we're just going to fill in gaps because we don't want to pay the staff to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Okay. And absolutely, in this system, as in any system, you can have the possibility to abuse lay leaders. And so you need to avoid that. I think absolutely. I think the two things I'd say in response is that you can do that just as easily in the system we currently have. So in other words, it's just driven by need. So in other words, let's say I'm at 9 a.m. Let's say I'm lousy at pastoral care. People realise, wow, Des is just doing a horrible job of pastoral care here. We really need to actually raise up some really dedicated lay leaders who'll help look after that. And I, because I'm not that great at it, by the way, I'm just speaking, I do like pastoral care, but I'm just using it as an example. I could go, well, I don't really like that, but these people do, and so I'll let them flog themselves doing it. In other words, whatever the system is, you can always allow the abuse of people. You don't want to. Hopefully, because you've got more clarity about what my particular role is, that will also give more clarity to what lay leaders do and hence better define boundaries. The advantage of this is that it does actually provide... not everyone will be in a position to be a super involved volunteer. I need a much better word than that, but I hope you know what I mean by that. I hope you're not insulted by that term. But someone might go, actually, being the magnification rep at 9 a.m, that's actually going to be quite a few hours a week. I just can't give that. That is fine. The last thing we want is exhausted Christians. And we want people to be living a life of sustainable sacrifice. But there will be some people in a church of 850 who are actually going, I would love to do that. I've been thinking about taking early retirement now for a few years. But I've never got the sense that church needed me because those staff members are always up the front. They seem to be doing everything. I'd actually quite like to. So we don't want to Shanghai people into doing things they don't want to do or aren't gifted for, but we also want to make... force. Sorry. That's both confusing and might even sound a bit racist. I didn't mean it to. But also to actually provide the space for those people who actually do go, I'd love to do that. So I actually had someone come to me just the other day saying that they would love to be involved in a really kind of time-intensive way in magnification. Now, I could get this automatically. I've got a spot for them because I can go, I've got a role for you. It's right here. And the mag pastor's job is to really train and invest in them and to see how they're going and make sure they're not, kind of burdened and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, great question. Other questions? Yeah. Sylvia.
Building onto that as well, perhaps
Totally.
The beauty of having these focuses for people is, as you say, that people can be more to their gifts. So they might be really amazing evangelists, other people aren't, so they can focus more on that. I guess my concern in that, though, is does that mean even the pastors that are in some of these roles are not being stretched or have the ability, and I guess even from a risk management perspective, if you have those five roles, if suddenly someone just turns around and goes, actually, I've got a job somewhere else, is there a sort of backup? Is there like, you know, I have more than one skill. I might be amazing at mission, but I also am good at maturity, so I'm sort of kind of like a 2IC, but not, or that's sort of built into this idea as well. So it's not just, as Joe was saying, maybe we're calling on lay people.
Yes.
But we're actually also giving ability for other pastors to grow skills that they're not so good in and to back up and support across.
Yeah, totally. And it will always be a juggling act, and it is in any system, between letting people play to their strengths, but also helping them kind of grow in areas which aren't yet strengths. So the two points. First of all, absolutely, this whole thing here, we'll have more than five pastors. This doesn't mean that there'll be a mass sacking, because there's actually only five spaces left. It doesn't mean that at all, because I think we'll also have people, even though we might not have gathering pastors in that full-blown way, I think it would still make sense to have staff members allocating some of their time to at least seeing how their particular focus area is going. Almost a bit like the foreman or the forewoman on the factory floor. If it's one person's job to make the wheels and the other person's job to make the chassis and the other person's job to make the engines, you might end up having wonderful wheels and wonderful chassis and wonderful engines but never be able to make a car because they don't fit together. The job of the foreman is to make sure that you're actually building a car. Well, that could be, you know, you could call them a focus leader, where it's less involved than but they're still keeping an eye on things. That could be a role there. And staff can fill that. Staff will also dot in here. So it might be that I become, heaven help them, I become the mission rep for 9 a.m. Now, it could be that. So you can actually, or you could have someone who's the mag pastor for the whole church, but also, gosh, they're great in membership. They're just really good at doing church and getting people together. And so they become the membership rep at 10:30. So there is a role for staff here in this matrix as well. When it comes to really the question is about over-specialisation to the point where you're not actually being stretched, I think that will be important to avoid, and that is absolutely a potential weakness of this. So currently, it will have inverse weaknesses. Currently, our problem is that it's the problem of generalisation. I'm good at some things, but I'm not good at everything. And my gathering just needs to kind of put up with that. With specialisation, you don't get so much of that, but there could be dangers for, you know, getting really focused. So if I become the mag pastor, like all of a sudden I'm leading singing and choosing all the songs, and that's a really bad idea, it could be that I just get so fixated on that 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 becomes a problem. I think there is a role there to actually be making sure that actually we are working in other things, certainly consulting with other people and working as a team. So this is one of the, I said there's lots of stuff that we haven't kind of got to yet. How do staff relate to each other here? Like, do we meet as teams? Like, I'm not entirely sure yet. So I'm really just bringing you up to, I'm just telling you what we know, really, in summary. I imagine that, say, maybe once a month, all of these M pastors meet to see how they're going and making sure they're doing well. And I'm imagining, say, once a month, the mission pastor meets with all of their M reps to see how the whole church is going when it comes to mission across 9 and 10:30 and 5 and 10 and all those kinds of things. So the idea is to get the benefit of specialisation but not become siloed. And we are not going to do that perfectly. But we're going to need to work at that. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's what we're thinking at the moment. And actually, each of these people would have their own teams. So if you're a mag rep at 9, then you'll actually have teams underneath you. Take membership as an example. If you're a membership pastor, you'd have membership reps at each of your gatherings. And these membership reps might actually be looking after multiple teams. So they would be looking after probably welcomers. You know, I'll have a whole team of people who I help train up in welcoming. And I'd be running a membership course, but of course it's not going to be me who's doing it. I'm going to be raising up a team of people to run that. You actually have a whole bunch of people doing things here, and hopefully spaces open up to do that.
Are there other churches in Australia or in the world that have this model, and how effective has it been?
Great question. Yes, there are churches that do this. I can assure you we haven't. This is not something we've dreamt up. This particular expression of it emerged in a place called, is it Saddleback? Is it Saddleback, Rick Warren? In the States in the 90s, he wrote a book called The Purpose-Driven Church. It's kind of a brilliant book and a terrible book. Like a lot of American books, and no offense, now I've just offended everyone. Hey, if you're an American who lives in Shanghai, I'm really sorry. It's like a lot of American church books. It's great on strategic thinking and uses the Bible appallingly, just terribly. So you can read it with great profit if you look at the kind of the thinking. Just, it doesn't need to back itself up with the Bible. But it started with thinking through it that way. Since then, churches around the world, but certainly in Australia, have actually taken the idea, the basic idea that we've been talking about, designing self around purposes, and actually refined it not just structurally, but also thinking theologically about it. So in many ways, what you see here is an attempt to live out 1 Corinthians 12, the giftedness of the body. Not everyone's an eye, not everyone's an ear, not everyone's a big toe. We all fit together, and we fit together best when we're a body. Now, of course, this is not the only model that does that. We still try and recognise that. As far as effectiveness is concerned, it's absolutely been mixed. This is not the silver bullet. The really important thing to notice is that the five M's is not the gospel. It's not the gospel. The gospel is what saves people. The gospel is what defines these five purposes, and every gospel-driven church is driven by those purposes, whether they explicitly frame it that way or not. This is just an attempt to structure ourselves in such a way to as much as possible get out of the gospel's way so that it can do its work, if I can put it like that. The churches that have structured themselves well like that have actually seen really great gains, because they were an engine that was always on about the same thing. They're just now running more smoothly. It's not perfect, though. And again, we don't know exactly how it would look like, because we're just wanting to bring you up to speed on where we're up to, so that you, as kind of our another circle of leadership, are kind of aware of what's going on. Now, other questions, comments? I'm conscious. Oh, I'm sorry. It's 16 past. Anna?
Sorry.
Don't apologise. It should be me who's apologising, because I've helped us run over time.
How do you think it might affect mathers and ministers in training? Would they be under one type of ministry, or would they go across?
What a great...
Yeah, would they just be filling up boxes?
No. Look, filling up boxes. Yeah, that's right. What are you doing, Matt? I fill boxes. I don't know. Again, at this point, I'm just making it up as I go along. My suspicion is that on a day-to-day, it's still really helpful for mappers to have a go-to person who's their primary trainer, which is what we already do. It's also helpful for mappers to have people they get seconded to get special skills from. I really want to do some hospital visiting, and so I'll go and do, you know, something with, say, in an older gathering. And so they do that. I imagine something similar would happen here. But there's no reason why you couldn't have a mapper. You could have a mapper who is they're the membership rep at 10:30, and then the maturity rep at 7 and 5 and 7. And that might actually end up totaling their job. But they wouldn't have two bosses. My guess is they'd have one person they report to who would then second them elsewhere. But I don't know. Yeah. Well, sorry, no, it's okay. Okay, go. Tell me lunch, because I don't want to hold up lunch, Ken. Are we good to go?
I'll find out.
Yeah, go and find out, because the last person I want to make angry is the person who's cooking me lunch.
I don't
know
if it's disrespectful or rude.
No, it's fine. I've already insulted Shanghai and America. Yeah, yeah. It's fine.
I'm aware, seeing that you've got five different people, like, there's obviously going to be a change in terms of a church member's relationship with another
Yeah. 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 Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And I think I was wondering if women would offer something that your male
7 minutes
might not. That's not a question, because it's not a statement.
No.
If women are being involved at a level of making some of these decisions, then I think women typically
yes.
are different in some ways than men.
Totally. No, absolutely, absolutely. And look, I'm so glad you asked that question. There are two questions there. The first question is, if I no longer have a gathering pastor, who will be my pastor? Like, who do I go to when the wheels fall off in life? And the second question is, how do women, and in particular women staff members, fit into this? Is that, have I heard that right in those two things? And they're connected to some extent.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I'll deal with the first question first, which is just generally the who's my pastor question. I think when it comes to this, that is the big question that we'll all be asking. Absolutely. Everyone in church will go, oh, well, I knew who I went to before. The answer is when the wheels fall off, say, if I can put it like that, or if I've got an issue, who do I talk to? I think the first answer, and I think this is how bigger churches would profit from working anyway, is the first person you go to is your small group, if you're part of a small group, because that means that you'll actually get the pastoral care you need, because in a big church, individual pastors aren't going to be able to cope with all of that. Now, having said that, we already do that here now. Not everyone's part of a small group, and even if they are, some issues are simply above the pay grade, if I can put it like that. We hear about it and we get freaked out as leaders, so who do I go to then? The idea here is that you can actually now go to anyone. So the thing is, staff would spread themselves more evenly around the services, I would think. That doesn't mean that we all start now going to all four, but rather we're kind of less closely tied, particularly because as staff, we would need to go through a mindshift gathering going, this whole church, I'm in charge of an area of this whole church. It now means, though, that you can actually go to whomever you want. Now, that's got disadvantages and advantages. The disadvantage is you might not know each individual pastor as well as you knew your gathering pastor. On the other hand, it does now mean that you get to go to who you like. So to keep using myself as an example, currently at 9 a.m, I'm the pastoral go-to person. If you like me, that's your good luck. If you don't like me, that's your bad luck, because I'm the person you're stuck with. If now you've got a whole team of pastors, you can actually go, oh, I don't really like Des, but gosh, I really like Bernie. I'm going to go to Bernie and talk to her about that. That's in a general sense the way of thinking about that. When it comes to women, not just further on down the track, but actually in this decision-making process generally, certainly further on down the track, I want to make it really clear that just because in this model, I don't think... It's not impossible to have a women's pastor in this model, but I'm not thinking we'd have a women's pastor. That doesn't mean I don't want women employed on staff. In fact, to the contrary, I may not feel like we have a women's pastor, but I definitely want female pastors. And I actually want more women on our staff team than we currently have. And that might be women who are on paid... Sorry, and people are going, who is that? It is. Well, we do. But the thing is, we actually do. So Anne is obviously on staff. We've got Melissa, who's our office manager, who is involved in serious administry, if I can put it like that. We've got Ruth, who's our mapper. So we do have women on our ministry team. And we have really involved lay people in our ministry team. I don't mean to embarrass you, but I mean, you're here and there are other people in similar circumstances. I actually want to see more of that, and I think this actually provides an opportunity for that to happen. So you might not have a women's pastor, but you might go that our membership pastor is a woman. I'd see no problem with that. Or you might go, in maturity, at 10:30, I think it would make a heap of sense to actually have MREPs of both sex in each of those columns. So you've got both women and men here taking high levels of leadership and responsibility there for precisely the reasons you're talking about. Now, how are women playing a role in the current decision-making process? You're right, we don't currently have the men on the staff team far outnumber the women. Part of it is actually talking with you now. That's actually part of this. This is not just an information session. This is, we want feedback. So we really want to hear the voices of men and women here. Part of it is also thinking about it at a TCLT level, which is our Trinity City leadership team, which is a lay leadership team, which sits over all of us. They're my boss. And that's made up of both men and women. So there are ways there. But look, we want to hear from as many people as possible as this in leadership positions, men and women. Does that answer your question? I mean, it may not satisfy you, but it may. Now, I think I've probably got my 7 minutes. I've got four. Okay. Very good. I'm going to go. Yeah, Alistair, you've not spoken yet.
Are you implying that over the next couple of months, we will all, everybody in the church, will be given a copy of that group with staff people, that whole group filled up?
There are two elements to that question. The first is of timing. I'm really glad you asked that. Some of you might be going, when's all this going to happen? Well, the answer is, we don't know. But what I can say is it's not going to be in a rush. So none of this will happen this year. At the earliest, I would be thinking that rollout, if you like, would be in, say, term one of next year. But we've still got loads of details to sort out. And the question, secondly, is what does rollout look like? Do we make a kind of a big ta-da? Well, we might do, but we might not, because a lot of this stuff could actually just happen behind the scenes. I'd actually be interested in your feedback on that. Because some things won't actually affect your average person on the ground at all. Things will just continue to happen. Other things will be more visible. My basic principle is whatever will be a visible change, we will really clearly communicate to people. Whatever's less visible, well, we're not going to hide it. But there is a way of communicating which can actually confuse and unsettle in a way that's unnecessary. We're still working through that, to be honest. Kathy. Yes. Yeah. The simple answer is a lot of the decisions you're already making will already fit somewhere. They actually won't have an effect on you. So if you're thinking, I'd like to keep leading a Bible study, well, this wouldn't affect that at all, because it's not as if we're going to ditch Bible studies. They're still going to be done. The fact is, with a lot of these things, certainly in the short term, you know, we might make a sudden switch and actually still wake up realizing that the world is much the same. It's just that it's arranged slightly differently around purposes. And the differences you might see is that you end up reporting to slightly different people further on down the track. But because, praise God, we're already aiming for these things, maybe not with the clarity that we'd like to, but we are, and we're doing a lot of these things, on the ground, a lot of things will look the same. The hope is that over time, the extra clarity and the extra channeling of giftedness will mean that we'll do the same things better. So the key thing here isn't new things, it's the same things better. Now, I think I'm being given the big T sign. Thank you so much for your time. If you want to come and talk to me about this over lunch, I'm really happy to. This is just an initial thing. Please keep this under your hats for the moment, because again, we're wanting to have concentric circles of communication. Of course, if people ask you questions, you can ask them with, you know, I'll leave that to your discretion, but we're still working this out. Thank you for bearing with us. If you've got more questions, do ask, because we'd love your help.
Keep it under our hats, but what about others who we might lead with, who are part of the same kind of opposite?
Yeah, of course you can tell them. Of course, absolutely, you can tell them that. And I've actually recorded that so that those people can hear that. Thank you, and thank you, Cooks, for your patience.